Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Previously on the Simply Human podcast.
So, well, here's another thing. So Tuesday, take kids out of school. Wednesday morning, Jen wakes me up at 6 o'clock. Hope so. She says she wakes up. I was like, all right, here we go. We did it. So I take her to the doctor. She tests positive for strep.
Thank God.
I know.
We did it.
I know.
We did it.
Confetti poppers. Like something we know. Yeah, you know. Something we've had experience with. It's episode 238 of the Simply Human podcast with your hosts, Mark and Rick. Two human beings. Being human, our goal was to help you understand how humans are designed to eat, sleep, move, and enjoy. You can start living more like a human today. On today's show, it's Jennifer Maynard. Jennifer worked in the biotech and pharmaceutical specialty medicine areas for over 20 years. After putting two decades of her passion into changing people's lives through modern medicine, she felt her knowledge and experience would be better served focusing on food as medicine. So, you weren't on the call. Which we're going to explain in the next show, because this crosstalk we need to talk about.
What? I'm sorry.
We're going to talk about.
I don't know. What is that? I'm unaware.
So I
live in a rock. Under a rock.
Yeah. So the last episode that you dear listener either watched or listened to. Was the Jeff Gusky interview where we talk about the COVID and we talk about indoor humidity and all that stuff. And so in the intro of that show, you and I talked about us being like primary contacts and all that. And we had to take the kids out of school, da da da. Well, so am I going to just tell you the story? Is that how that's, that what we're doing
here? Just tell
here?
The story.
So, the kids, you know, were exposed on a Friday. The person they were exposed to tested positive over the weekend. So we found that out on a Tuesday. So because of how the timing worked, they needed to come out of school on that Tuesday, which was like the first weekend. It was September 1st, I believe.
Okay.
So there were some other kids also exposed in the same way of some friends of ours. And so we were all in the same boat. Two of our kids were primary contacts. The rest of the family is secondary contacts. But we'd hung out all weekend, so it's like we're kind of all in the same.
We might as well quarantine kind of together,
just, yes.
So we're not just.
So they
alone,
came down here on that Tuesday night and had dinner down here.
What'd you have?
Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday.
So I usually do. We do corn. Tortillas and fish. Pescado.
I'm sorry, what? Pescado?
Pescado.
Pescado. Like a white guy learning how to speak Spanish.
Well, what's so wrong? You nailed it. So you would name precisely what's happening. Okay, so they came down because the children of that family were primary contacts. The employer of the husband of that family, the dad, they made him go get tested. He tested negative Wednesday. The wife went and tested on Thursday, positive. So it's like, okay, now
you're all primary contact.
The whole family is primary contact, and we're resetting our quarantine to Tuesday from the last Friday when they were exposed, right? So it's like, okay, so I call our doctor, like a pediatrician, because me and Hunter, my son, we're going out to the ranch. I was going to take my son out to dove hunt and stuff. I called him and I was like, do we go? We're going to be out in the middle of nowhere.
Kill some of God's creatures.
Yes.
Didn't do anything to you. Innocent, but that's fine.
A bird pooped on me last couple of years. That's a true story.
So you're going to take it out on all birds. Just kill as many birds as you can.
Yeah, I'll rue the day that you pooped on Mark H. Rogers. Okay. So the doctor was like, if y'all aren't showing symptoms, go. It's fine. You'll be fine. If something crazy happens, you can come home, whatever. So we go, and when we go out to the farm, the ranch, whatever you want to call it, I never shower. I don't.
This is when you invited me, by the way.
It is.
So I'm glad I didn't go.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad my social anxiety told me not to.
Man. So we go out to the farm. We come back on Sunday, and this is the part where it kind of gets crazy. So I come home on Sunday with my son in the clothes that I left in on Friday, right?
Of course.
So I hadn't showered. I hadn't even changed clothes in like
classic Mark,
like 3 days.
Didn't brush my teeth. Didn't wipe my bottom.
I wiped my bottom.
I don't believe that for a second.
Moving on. Usually... So I get home and I walk in the door. I hadn't even said hi to my daughters yet. And Jen comes over and she's like, go get in the shower. You smell terrible. And I was like,
if I had a nickel.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay, she's being dramatic. This is like my inner monologue. It's like, I don't smell that bad. She's just like, you know, that's how you're going to greet me. Like, I go, I don't even smell. Wait a second.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's like, that's impossible for me to not stink right now.
Yeah.
So I didn't say anything to Jen or anyone. I just like went into the shower, and I'm in the shower, and I'm like, you know, I got like the soap, and I never, you know, how often do you like, it's like the Seinfeld thing, like the milk. You smelled it. I smelled it. What's it supposed to smell like? Like no one, you never like smell milk. So I'm like smelling the soap, and I'm like, and I got all of her little soaps. You know, she has all the soaps and everything, and I'm like doing all stuff, and I'm like, I don't know. So like, I don't think I can smell anything. And so I get out of the shower and I spray cologne like right on my arm. And I'm like, and that's when I was like, oh, crap.
And so to verify, you went out in the yard and grabbed a huge pile of dog turds and shoved your face in them.
I thought about doing that with a big cow patty out at the place.
Gross.
But and videoing it. So I go get the coffee beans. I smell the coffee beans. Nothing. So Jen is like, get out of here. Go get tested. So I go. I get a test. This is a Sunday. I test positive. I come home, and I'm in the room here. And Jen goes Monday and tests negative. So if she had tested positive, then we're just going to quarantine all together.
Yeah,
there's no way
well.
The kids can isolate from the parents for 10 days, you know. So it's like, okay, she tested negative. Pretty awesome. So it's like there's two options, really, for most people there's one option. You got to stay locked away for 10 days, right? Like,
I don't know how you do that with a family.
Yeah, like you can't
like literally just stay in a room and everyone, I'm coming out to. Well, you can't even
not
come
even
out.
That. Not even that. Like it's like you stay the heck in there. Now I'm thinking through like Jen's got to
slide fruit roll-ups underneath the door.
that's the only food
flat enough.
We like, and on the outside of the door, there's all the other food that we've tried to slide under. It just smashed up against the door, and I'm like trying
to
reach
slide
it.
Your fish taco, and the tortilla goes underneath there, but the fish stays on the other side of the door.
So
I'm sorry, the pescado,
sandwich de pescado, un sandwich. So
that's how they say it, actually, sandwich.
Thank you very much. So it's like I didn't want to do that. The thought of 10 days, like
Josh.
I did one day, you know, from Sunday night when I got home, I watched like a couple of movies, you know, and just laying on the bed with my laptop, and I was like, this sucks. So the kicker was Jen's parents sold their house, and so they needed to like access the house that's out there that has the kitchen and the bathroom
the farm,
and all that. There is a cabin up there that has a couple of bunk beds and like running water, no refrigerator or anything. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go just get like do a curbside order at HEB or something and get like instant potatoes, chunky soup, like that kind of stuff, bottles of water, like all that, and just go out there. So Monday night, that's what I did. I went out there and I stayed out there for 11 days.
Gosh.
Luckily, I feel like I cheated the system. The only symptoms, like I still don't have my smell and taste back all the way.
It's good for you.
I still can't like smell my own farts, which I miss. I do miss.
No one else does.
But I can smell. I can smell like really, really strong stuff. I just can't smell like dinner cooking.
Like not your farts.
I know. That's a weird. But it's
that's
like body odors and like things like that. Like, but like, I could smell the waffle fries from Chick-fil-A.
Hmm.
like, so I don't know. I've done some reading on it. Apparently, it's like 6 to 8 weeks before it'll come back, like all the way. Yeah. So it is a very weird. I talked to someone else. One of my friends got it and called me to like ask me and all that. And he's like, "Well, I ate some M&Ms yesterday, and like I could taste those." And I was like, "You need to like check like with something really pungent that you know what it smells like, because it was weird. Like I would eat something, and I would if I didn't know my smell was gone or taste was gone. It's like the familiarity of how it feels in your mouth.
Yeah,
that's what she said. is enough to like kick that dopamine hit or whatever it is in your brain. Like, it's weird. It's hard to explain. Like, so the feeling of food like matters, which you wouldn't really think it does. So, I had limited internet access. And so I went hunting out there and I tried to, become one with the cows. And I like, was it Jane Goodall?
You live amongst them and you ate grass.
I did so there's a video I took. I probably have like 20 minutes worth of videos on my phone that I still need to edit into a little movie. But in one of the videos I set the phone up and I get on my hands and knees and all the cows are like sleeping under this tree and I'm like slowly walking towards them on all fours and like at one point like I reach down and like take some grass in my mouth and I'm like making moo noises and then it's like I get like up to a certain point and they all just freak out and run. I did ride my mountain bike naked.
Did really?
I did.
There's not anybody on this planet who had more fun having COVID than you. I pretended I was a cow. I rode my bike naked. I took the seat off too.
I changed the seat. Replaced it with a screwdriver.
Well, I will say this. I have a friend of mine, and I told her, hey, you know, it was like, a buddy of mine's got COVID, and she was like, oh, man, that's terrible. Like, he's going to die. It's like, oh, no, it's worth it for the jokes. We've been making jokes nonstop for like the last 3 or 4 days about how, you know,
well, when it was funny, like,
change his will.
Well, that Sunday when I was like waiting. Oh, yeah, man, I'd forgotten about this. So I'm like, hey, everyone, like in this group thread we're always talking about, I'm like, I'm at the doctor, like I can't smell anything. And I'm here getting tested. And then I got the results, and I didn't say I tested positive. I just put three of the like emoji plus signs, that, like which was I'm positive. I tested positive.
Which only one other person in the group correctly deciphered, and like an hour later.
No, it was like it was like 2 days later that y'all were like, y'all didn't really. I was like, no, guys, I have COVID.
Okay, I didn't know the test results came back in like 4 minutes. Right, I thought you had to wait like a day or two to get them. Yeah. And so like a day or two later, I'm like, did you get your result back? And Mark is like, I can't believe you don't care about me. How do you not know? And we're like, what are you talking about? We had to scroll back. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I guess the plus sign emoji. I guess that's what we're all going to find out when Mark gets AIDS, too. He's just going to put a bunch of plus signs in the group chat.
That's
like,
that's
the kind of see this time. We got AIDS. What do we got here? So
checking off the list of things that I've already gotten. Like, well, there's only like three left.
I will say this. I feel like I am in a pretty realistic space about COVID. I am trying not to get it. I'm not going. I haven't gone to a restaurant in forever.
Mama's
if I go to
pizza.
The grocery store, I try to go in quickly and, you know, distance and wear a mask, but we're not going any places. But it's, you know, I'm still working in the office, so I'm still around people. So I'm trying to be as careful as I can. If I get it, I feel like at some point it's a foregone conclusion. If they don't come up with like a good, widely used, widely
like in the next few months
vaccine, we're all probably going to get it at some point, you know. But I'm hoping that if I get it, it's like you had it, where it's minimal intrusion. You know, I can quarantine here by myself. It's not, that part's no big deal.
Right.
I'll just have somebody, you know, Uber Eats or you know, whatever all the time. But
I need some fruit roll ups quick.
I wonder if you could Uber Eats some fruit roll ups.
Surely.
Just slide them through the doors
one by one.
Like, and
sure.
I'm just sitting at the base where the door meets the floor. Like, like eating them as they're.
Of all the flat, there's like of all the flat foods that we that could be
that's
like
the
one
the fruit roll-ups. It's not tortillas that
you're like. Like all they had was a fruit by the foot, sir. This is gonna take a long time. Why?
It's
why?
Gonna take forever.
He's like eating it.
Well, oh. I'm glad that you don't have it anymore. I'm glad that you didn't get terribly sick. I'm hoping that. That's to me, the worst part about it is we don't know a lot about this. And so we don't know, like, you know, long term implications. I'm hoping that, you know, your lack of, you know, your lack of bad symptoms means that you're not going to have any
right.
you know, implications down the line.
Right.
I guess time to update that will make sure I get in there.
Oh, you're in there.
You're going to leave me all your books. I'm going to be like, all right, what do I got here? Books.
You got,
Book Roger!
You got this one. This is an upcoming guest we're gonna have on. She sent me her book.
Sweet.
So that'll be cool. We're going to talk about that. That's an important
okay.
issue. Awesome. People listening to the audio version are like, what are they talking about? Okay. Next week, we're going to talk about...
Then they should watch the video version, and maybe we can start making some money.
Next week, we're in the intro, we're going to talk about why you haven't been on the last like three interviews. And then we should be back on track. So we booked a show in like January a couple weeks ago. So we are.
If we're all still alive, then yeah.
We're going to be booked out. So there's something else I was going to say about. Anyway, let's get to Jennifer. She was awesome. I had a good time talking to her by myself.
I have a really good reason, Mark.
I know.
Everyone
I know.
Knows that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's Jennifer. We talked to her about. Her birthday.
Stuff. Okay.
Connecting to Nature, a backward focus, the pharmaceutical company, food is medicine, soil depletion, community-supported agriculture, sustainable farming, good bugs, and growing things. Here's Jennifer. But just to peel the curtain back a little bit, Rick is not on the call with me tonight. It's not like we get paid for this, so I can't say that he's missing work, technically, because the Dallas Stars... are in the Stanley Cup Finals. Are you a hockey fan, being from Alaska, New Jersey? That's north. Is that that's hockey, right?
I mean, I like playing sports, but I don't have the time, unfortunately, anymore to watch much sport. I did watch the Tour de France. I was a runner and a triathlete, so
okay.
I'm a little bit biased to those. Well, I played baseball, but
let's talk about triathletes in just a second, in triathlons in just a second, not specific triathletes. So Rick is from Dallas, like I am, and he's a huge Dallas Stars fan. They're in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Nice.
Game two is happening now. They're in the second period, and I'm fine with him because if it was the Cowboys in the Super Bowl or something, like I would get it. So we're going to have to figure out another time to record the ins and outs after this.
No
problem. But I was like, I'll do the interview by myself and, you know, whatever. I understand. So what distances did you do? Because people, when you say triathlons, people will be like, oh, yeah, and they don't understand. Like, no. There's, like, all the different levels and types of distances.
Yeah,
so.
I just did sprints and Olympic. My husband's an Ironman
yes,
guy, so
cool.
He does the long stuff. I just do short. And, yeah, I haven't done one in a while since New Jersey. The season's pretty short, and
right.
especially since we started the farm and been a little too busy to train. But
right.
anyway,
right.
that's
yeah.
another story.
Yeah, I did, for like a seven-year period, I did, like, between like, yeah, I did anywhere from sprints to I did one Ironman and like five or six
nice.
Half Ironmans. I'm glad like the Ironman was a great experience. I love doing it. I will never do another one. When
yeah.
I did the Ironman, my plan was to do one like every other year. Like that was my,
yeah.
but then like, as yeah, you know, that was my daughters were like very young and now it's just like, I just don't have 7 hours to go ride a bike on Saturday
That's...
morning. And then like working out all hours of every day. Like it's so it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I got my Ironman in. I can say that I did it.
Got it out of your system.
And we're good. So this is kind of this is up towards Alaska. This is Washington.
Yeah.
It's like
some time over there.
That's still.
I mean,
like,
I've bounced around a lot. I started in Alaska and then California, all the way from Southern California to Northern, then Germany, then New Jersey, then Switzerland, then back to
good
New Jersey.
Good gracious.
So. Bounce around a bit.
Very cool. Okay, so we've done like kind of the longer intro, But I want to hear from you. And we normally do like a birthday game. We guess your birthday. And since Rick isn't on, what is your birthday? We just have to
January 3rd.
January 3rd. One of my best friends growing up is a January 3rd. Let's see, I'm going to put that in the show notes. January 3rd. We like to know birthdays. Rick has actually guessed a birthday correct one time of all the guests we've done. So that's kind of a fun game we play. So in your own words, like give us like the Cliff's Notes version of kind of like your background, your story, and how you ended up doing like what it is you're doing now.
Okay.
And we are recording and let's do this.
Okay. So, I started my childhood and my life in growing up in a homestead, Alaska. So we kind of lived on the land, with the land, very connected to nature.
That's awesome.
And that's always stayed with me my whole life. When I was in kind of later middle school, we moved to California, very close to a lot of family. And my uncle actually contracted HIV and battled through HIV and then AIDS in the 80s when there wasn't really.
Gosh, that was like, it was like kind of like COVID now. Like everyone's like, what should we do? Yeah. Like
everyone was scared of it. Yeah. You know, doctors wouldn't treat them. There was no real standard of care.
Right.
Insurance companies wouldn't cover a lot. So for me, that was a really life-changing event because I was there for him a lot and I watched him suffer a lot. I went into the healthcare industry. Biotech was actually my major, biochemistry. And I focused really heavily on specialty medicines for over 20 years of my life. And I loved it.
So you started when you were like nine?
Yeah.
I don't understand the math. I'm not good at math.
Yeah. But I spent pretty much my whole career doing that. But I've always grown my own food, but for specialty medicines, that was my passion. And I really felt we needed to make more progress with acute diseases like that. But as I moved up into kind of executive levels doing that, I got kind of a broader picture and I felt like, okay, we have made really good progress. I'm not an anti-modern medicine person. I think it has its place, but I feel like we have it really backwards. We spend like 80% of the focus on pills and injections and interventions that are using, you know, treatments that I believe are better suited for acute illnesses and things that we don't have other options for. And we spend less than 20% on food as medicine and lifestyle medicine. And that's where I just felt like we weren't doing enough to try to, for one, prevent chronic illness, but two, also to provide more interventions with chronic illness, because we're losing that battle.
Right.
So where I feel like HIV AIDS, there's been incredible progress, certain forms of cancer where there wasn't much alternative options before, but with chronic illness, no one can debate we're losing that battle. People are just getting more and more ill. We're putting them on more and more medication and we're not making them better. So the one thing I personally experienced, so I've almost always grown my own food. It's just been a passion of mine and I live a very healthy lifestyle. And I felt like, why shouldn't other people have access to this? Why shouldn't other people have more access to education on how you can first prevent that illness, but also interventions. And I personally knew people affected by type 2 diabetes and really felt like I helped them get past a really spiraling downward effect on their health. And so that's where I decided actually to leave that industry and start my own regenerative farm, because I believe everything starts actually with the soil, not even just with the food, but the origin of the food, and really kind of start from the ground up. And I launched Nutrition for Longevity. After I launched the farm, I launched Nutrition for Longevity, which is a company that focuses on, you know, curating the fruits and vegetables from the farm and turning them into something useful that follows kind of a very precise diet. And that's what I do now. So I've really completely flipped from, you know, being in a science field. This is still a science field, but
right,
in a different way. And really focusing on chronic illness and doing that with food as medicine.
Yeah, there's so many things to get to just with what you just said. So like I read some in a book or something, you know, one time that like back in like the 40s, 50s, 60s, you spend, you know, 8-9% of your income on like healthcare and like 40-50% on food. And now it's the opposite. Now we're spending less than 10% of our income on food and like 50, 60, 70% of our income on medicine. It's like we don't understand. It's like what I always tell people is like, okay, you can buy cheap food, but you're gonna like, oh well, I can't afford to eat healthy. Well, no, okay, you can't afford it. Now you're gonna pay for it at some point. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't think a lot of people know that. So actually the US, we spend 6% per capita on food.
Gosh.
In the US. The least of any country in the world.
That's unbelievable.
We spend the most on healthcare. I mean, something's backwards right there, right? And we're only the 34th healthiest development country. So we have it wrong. And that's why I said I feel like we got to flip it from 80% spent on pharmaceuticals and, you know, treating illnesses through pills and injections, whereas we need to flip that. 80% of our chronic illnesses, we've already proven this, could be addressed with lifestyle changes, one of those obviously being food and nutrition. So there's so much that we need to be doing different. And if you go back to the 50s, there's a lot of things that were different that, you know, I'm not saying people necessarily had the same levels of longevity. There were other acute illnesses that right. caused a lot of problems, but we had healthy soil, or much more healthy soil. Our soil has been completely degenerated over the last 50 plus years. We have pretty much decimated our soil microbiome through the use of different chemicals. And so we've lost this biodiversity and we've lost this connection with food, and it's all kind of accumulating into chronic illness. And it's just something that I feel like we need to take a step back and really evaluate our food system and our healthcare system and go, okay, we have these really backwards.
So I want to get to the food stuff and like the farm stuff. But before that, like from a pharmaceutical standpoint, there's a book that I always talk about on the show. Rick would make fun of me because I brag about how many times I've read it and all this stuff. Like it's Anti-Fragile. By Nassim Taleb. And there's this, there's a chapter about what he's really talking about is that like science and like research and people in a lab getting paid to find medicine, like that typically, like if you look at over history, that's not where medical breakthroughs have come from. They've come from like accidents. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, like we tried this and that actually was a side effect. So, huh, that's interesting. And so it's like, it's people just tinkering and like doing stuff instead of just like this science, like telling you what to do. And so the pharmaceutical company, it's like, or the industry, okay, take this one thing. We know the side effects. Okay, that's fine. We know the side effects for the one thing. But when you add that one thing into a system that's ingesting maybe 6, 7, 8, 15, we haven't studied how all 15 of those things are going to react to each other.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So it's sure. Like, what do we do about that? What's the answer there? You know, like the system that's so ingrained and so conventional wisdom, like, oh, I'm sick, I'm going to take an antibiotic. That's like, that's if you say you're not going to take the antibiotic, you're crazy. You know,
And we don't. It's just like with farming, we've kind of gone away from looking at things from a system approach. And we look at things in just this linear, this one thing. So it's just a cucumber plant and I can just feed it synthetic chemicals and I can keep that alive. But we don't look at the entire system, just like the human body. Right. It's like, you know, when we figured out leptin was being blocked, which was causing people to not turn off their, you know, feeling hungry right. and wanting to eat more. So they connected that to obesity. the first thing wasn't let's figure out how this all fits together. It
it's
was
how can we
create a pill.
Right, to fix the leptin problem. Right. No. Like,
yeah, it's a cycle. If you really look at how our body uses food, there's other things that become this cyclical loop, this vicious cycle that our modern food system drives. And you can easily change that with just changing your diet. But instead we want a pill. Yeah. And that was a pretty catastrophic thing because they did come out with pills and we had a lot of people suffer because of it. So yeah, so I think that's definitely something that is heavily impacting our health as a country. It's also not sustainable. If you just look at the expense of spending almost 20% per capita on our pharmaceuticals and our healthcare system, it's not sustainable. As you look at this wave of baby boomers that are heading into this huge peak in the US, it's not sustainable. We have to change it. We will bankrupt our country. Yeah. So not only will more people be ill, but we won't be able to afford it. So I try to, you know, tell people you can look at it at the holistic way and that people should live a better life. But if you look at it also pure financially, we just can't sustain this.
Yeah. What's the definition of better at that point?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's like, if you can't afford or you're totally miserable, like what's the, you know, that's what everything that I do, this is like when I'm coaching people or talking to new, you know, I guess clients or whatever. It's like, I'm not doing something to look a certain way or to necessarily do anything like, and I had this conversation with a friend today who was talking about investing in some home gym equipment. Mm. And I was like, you can't look at that as like $600 that you're just throwing down the toilet. You are like, you are investing in being, and he's like my age. I'm in, you know, I was going to say mid 30s. I'm 39. I'm not mid 30s anymore. That is gone. But it's like, you are investing in, at that point, being a good granddad. You know, like, I want to be strong enough that I can like get down on the ground and play around and get up off the ground and sit crisscross on the ground. Like, that's what you're investing in. Like, that's the longevity that we're after. And it's like, oh, you only live once. I'm going to have donuts every meal, you know? Like, that's great in the moment, but that's not making you a better grandpa, you know?
Yeah. it's really challenging because we have so many, I would say, food temptations in our modern food, and those are things that do make it challenging for people to make that decision. But that's where our diet, we focus on the longevity and the research behind the people that live the longest, healthiest lives. And what's more important than longevity is the health span, because they live healthy longer, right? And they're vibrant and they have great cognitive ability. I mean, if you look at the increase in our cognitive issues in the US, like, it's frightening. Dementia now is showing up late 70s and 80s, it's showing up in 50s. Ugh. And you know, that's certainly nothing I want to go through in my 50s. I mean, I'm not that far from there. So
you got like 31 years to 50. the age jokes.
So definitely something that I think is important is, I think people undervalue the importance of what we're putting in our bodies. Like, we don't even think twice about, you know, eating at a fast food joint or a lot of the processed foods that, I mean, I was looking at a study and they were saying over 90% of food choices in the grocery store are just bad choices. Right. Like, it's not even that you have 50-50, like it's 90% are bad. And I have some rules, like, I won't go to the grocery store if I'm hungry because I know, like, this other person's going to throw a bunch of like cookies in my car.
I haven't had the Lucky Charms in a while. That's a nostalgia thing. I need some Lucky Charms. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, when you know, I've been around a lot of, you know, especially now that I'm in the food industry more, around, you know, what a lot of companies do. They have food engineers that literally engineer this food to be beyond your control. So they take it past what they call the bliss point, where you literally can't turn it down and you can't just eat one. You know, that's the food industry is starting to do, is they're getting feedback. There's too much sugar. There's too much this, too much process. So their response is, well, everything's fine in moderation, right?
Right.
But they know they engineer that food to be impossible to resist. So people can't just eat one. At least most people.
Have you read the Dorito effect?
No.
So it's a whole book about, it's actually, I guess, a lot of those plants, from what I understand from reading that book, is that a lot of the plants that engineer the smells and the tastes are in, like, up in the New Jersey area.
It doesn't surprise me.
There's like an industrial row of these factories that if you drive by, it's like, oh, that smells great over there. That's mama's home cooking. Yeah. And it's just chemicals, you know? It's like you take this Dorito and you put this, they have chicken and biscuits and gravy chips now, you know? It's like, that's not food, no. People. No. Come on. I mean, every now and then, like at the 4th of July barbecue, like have some biscuits and gravy chips, but like for them, don't have those like for breakfast every day, you know?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's talk about the farming stuff.
Okay.
So my wife and I, and some other families that are in this town, we live about 3 hours west of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so it's a mid-sized community, about 120,000 people. But we are lucky enough to have a CSA, a community supported agriculture. Nice. So you pay the annual fee, and we actually Monday. So today is the day that we get our huge bag of just stuff, you know, and what we love about it is like, okay, what is it? Heck of this, you know, it's like you're having to Google like how to cook this thing. Yeah, you know, and so, but we just love that, and like it's, you know, you pay a lot up front, but you're not having to buy vegetables at the store. Like it's just, and you know that, like we know the farmer; he's a friend of mine. Like I know that he's not doing anything crazy with the soil. He's like, it's all, you know, organic, homegrown, and there's just, you know, we've got three kids, and there's just something about getting that stuff in your system that is like, I hate that we say like it's like medicine. Like, how did we flip it? Like, yeah, it should be like, it should be the other way. Like, medicine should be like, this medicine is like organic vegetables, not the vegetables are like medicine, you know? And so, like, is that kind of what you're doing? Like, what, tell me a little bit more about, like, kind of the farm and all that.
So we do a few things. So at the farm, it's a regenerative farm. We use all organic regenerative farming practices. So basically what that means is, you know, the average farm in the U.S. has less than 1% soil organic matter. It used to have 11 back in the 50s, you know, like you talked about. And so it's pretty depleted across the board. Most of our soil has very little soil microbiome, healthy soil microbiome. It's basically turning into dirt, and there's a big difference between dirt and soil. So our farm heavily focuses on building up the soil organic matter, which is like a sponge. So it's a sponge to retain water. We can retain up to 170,000 gallons of water per acre per 1% that we increase. So all these issues with drought and not being able to water with fresh water, agriculture and a lot of our agriculture hubs in the U.S., if we solved the soil organic matter issue, we would solve a lot of that problem. It also helps with soil erosion. So regenerative farms have about 700 times less soil erosion. So we're not sending our soil into rivers and then, you know, creating these dead zones in the ocean eventually. And then, you know, you get that biodiversity. Plants cope with stress through their soil microbiome, just like our humans do with our gut microbiome. So when you cut off their soil microbiome, they can't draw on those microbes to actually help them cope with stress. So when you add GMO crops and monocrops and chemicals, we're basically, we have crops that would never survive if we didn't do all these different things. Right. So with regenerative farming, you start to build that soil back up. You start to build a soil microbiome, which is the immune system of a plant. And then you start to actually have this really healthy, nutrient-rich food. You know, they say that has lost a huge percentage of nutrients over the last 50 years. And that's a lot of it is we don't have the matrix that's holding it all together. That's building this healthy soil microbiome that can make nutrients available. It's just like our gut microbiome. We can't digest certain food on our own. Our gut microbiome does a lot of that.
Right.
And that's what the soil microbiome does for plants is a lot of the nutrients are in the soil, but they're not bioavailable for a plant to take them up into their system. So the soil microbiome does that for the plant. So when you have a healthy soil microbiome, you don't have to add all these chemical fertilizers and additives and different things, because eventually it kind of, you have this ecosystem that's actually, again, looking at it as a system that hits this equilibrium, and it doesn't need all these additional things.
Right.
And then on top of that, you have the side effect of carbon sequestration. So, you know, we've lost about 2/3 of our carbon store in our soil because of all of this. And just over time, you slowly have that drift. And it's probably one of the biggest opportunities for us to reverse climate change is by regenerating the soil. And again, it's like a sponge, so it's also an opportunity to suck that carbon back into the soil. So you have all these incredible benefits of it in addition to growing healthy food to feed the human population. And, you know, we believe, you know, the reason why we say food is medicine is people just want a quick fix. And what we're trying to say is if you start with the healthy produce, you know, only 1 in 10 people in the U.S. eats enough fruits and vegetables per day. You know, that's probably the biggest starting point for most people is just try to get more of that fiber in your system, feed your gut microbiome, bring in some of that biodiversity, and it can do a lot to change your life. So that's our starting point is how do we get healthy soil? How do we do all the different farming practices like no tillage, adding lots of compost? We have vermicompost, Johnson Soup bioreactor compost, windrow compost.
Do you have animals? I was going to ask, do you have like pigs and cows and you have to do the rotating things like that?
We have just goats and chickens. So we don't have large livestock. We have goats and chickens that, you know, you can use a lot of their waste in their,
right.
At least the goats are hoofed animals. So they actually break up the soil in a healthy way without disrupting it. And then they rebuild it. So it accelerates that decomposition a little bit and breakdown and creation of the biodiversity. So we have all those things that we focus on. And then we have high biodiversity. So the average farm in the U.S. has no more than 2 crops. We have hundreds. And we build up pollinator habitats, which is a really important thing to support our beneficial insects. In the U.S., we've lost 80% of our total insect biomass, which if you look at, you know, our cycle of food, that's pretty catastrophic. Right. It's actually pretty frightening, and most people don't even know that. So we do a lot on our farm to try to build that up, and that helps us use organic practices because we don't need as many sprays. Our own beneficial insects actually, you know, take out a lot of the invasive species that we don't want. Right. So like, as an example, our farm every year, we have less and less pests. So like tomatoes, you get these big, huge tomato hornworms, as they're called, and they're massive. They can eat like in a day, almost a whole tomato plant. And what we notice on our farm is we have fewer and fewer every year. And then there's parasitic wasps that naturally showed up on our farm. And before they even got big enough, the parasitic wasps had already taken them out. So like I said, your system starting with your soil and then also above ground, you start to hit this equilibrium where it starts to kind of take care of itself.
Isn't that like...
And as an old... Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, you look... Rewind, like, I don't know, 500 years or something. And just, like, go out into the wilderness. And, like, nature had it. They figured it out. Like, there's this thriving, there's hoofed animals going in here, and there's compost and all this stuff. And it was like all the diversity and everything. And then, like, humans come through, just like with what you do with your body. Like, your body has, like, systems to fix things. And it's like, as soon as you cut your finger, like, our what we've been trying to do is, like, I'm going to put a Band-Aid on that. Well, like, your body has a pretty good little system of healing that all by itself. You don't need to intervene so much. And we think, go back to the land, it's like, oh, we're going to intervene, we know more, we're going to do, like, we're going to get the most out of this. And then look what it's doing to your body and to the land. Like, it's like, that's what Simply Human is. Like, that's like going back to how it was, like, things were designed to do. And so, like, your farm is like Simply Farm. It's like, it's like the human version of just the land, like going back to how was this land like developing all this and producing all this food in its natural state without all this extra stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what we say. Like, we kind of say the good stuff and nothing else, because I feel like that's hard now. It shouldn't be hard to get, you know, just the healthy plants. And I mean, I love that you bring up the CSA. So we do CSAs and we do those locally and we ship that. And then we do really tailored meal kits. And so those are obviously more prepped than just the vegetables. Because some people know what to do with kohlrabi and all these different exotic vegetables. Yeah. And some people are like, I don't know. It's not iceberg lettuce. I don't know what to do with it.
Right. It tastes weird. I'm not going to eat this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's purple. Yeah. Why is this purple? So we take that, you know, a step further, and we have chefs and dietitians, and they really tailor that into what's consistent with the longevity diet, which is where, again, all the regions of the world where people live the longest, healthiest lives, they actually have the same macros in common. So we use those macros. We use a lot of the nutrient nutrient-rich foods that they eat common in those regions, like a lot of legumes as their protein source. They eat a very plant-forward diet, so that's what we do. And then it's very, for us, it's very precise. It's an exact calorie range. And then we do medically tailored meals. And that's where the food as medicine piece really comes into play, is we're launching lines of, for example, we have a line right now for type 2 diabetes, and it really is using all of the modern science to help people with type 2 diabetes really start to see an improvement in their lifestyle without, you know, adding more medication on top. And right. So that those are some of the things we're really excited about that we're moving into pretty quickly. So it started as a farm, and then we launched the meal kit company, and the two are tied together. So we can have ultra fresh, ultra healthy food really fast. So it gets to someone's door in 48 hours of us harvesting most of our crops.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like lightning speed.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we're coming up on time, but I want to give you some time. So talk about the book, talk about the website, like promote yourself. Like, how can people find you and learn more?
All right. Yeah. So you can find us at nutritionforlongevity.com. And you can see we have vegan, fully plant-based meals. We have pescatarian. So those are the most common in the longevity regions. And the longevity diet book written by Dr. Walter Longo, he researched these regions for 30 years and came up with the longevity diet that has the exact macros. And then we also do a lot of education on what that means also from a lifestyle, as far as active lifestyle and exercise and community and the things that build up longevity, because there's multiple pillars that really help people live these long lives. And it's in areas where people live past 100 and live a very good life. Like I said, it's not just longevity, it's health span, which is what we focus on. And we're just trying to, again, bring that education. We're trying to shift the needle. Like you said, we have cheap food in the US, but it's actually making us very ill.
Right.
And we create these cycles in our system of, you know, insulin buildup, leptin blockage, and it's creating massive problems with weight and obesity and diabetes and heart disease. And so these are the things we're trying to really combat. And really, like you said, it's taking things back to a simplistic way. I mean, there is a lot of science behind it, but if you look at these regions, a lot of them were just somewhat poor regions. They had their own local farms. They didn't eat a lot of meat because they couldn't afford it.
Right.
Because if you look at the actual cost of, you know, commercial food, there's other effects like the environment and the overall cost. It's heavily subsidized in the US. So we don't see a lot of that cost. It's kind of artificially taken down. Whereas these other regions, you know, it was what it was. So they avoided a lot of those foods. So those are just some of the things we're trying to bring into play, because we now know those are, that's what's helping drive these people's health and almost completely void of chronic illness. And I think that's really key. Like I said, there's a financial component to it. There's the health component. And that's just what we're trying to really focus on and bring to people.
Awesome. So I'll put that in the show notes, the nutritionforlongevity.com. And now I will ask you the question that we ask all of our guests, and this doesn't have to have anything to do with anything we just talked about. It is, what is something that you enjoy about life, or something you do to make life more enjoyable, like a hobby or just something that just fires you up?
So, I mean, it's probably going to sound cliche, but I have always loved, growing things. I don't believe there's anything more rewarding than planting a seed in the ground and watering it and nurturing it and seeing it grow into this incredible plant that then feeds your body. I really encourage people, even if they just grow a little herb on their windowsill, connecting with plants, I think, is one of the most therapeutic things out there. Smelling your food, tasting what real food tastes like. I don't think there's anything better than that in the world. So That's what my passion is. That's what makes me happy. I love getting my hands dirty, whether I'm out at the farm or I even have my own garden, even though I also have a farm, just because I love to be around my plants. It's my Zen place. I mean, we do yoga out on the farm and stuff like that, but I don't need to do yoga. I can literally just pick weeds. And
I need to go check with my tomatoes over here. Y'all do your yoga. I'm going to be over here breaking off the little V thing and the thing. The tomato plant has the thing like this, and then there's one that grows up, and you
the
have to
sucker,
pull,
yeah,
pull the sucker out, yeah, not the succulent. That's something else. Dang it, there was something else I was gonna say when you were talking about growing things, garden. Tasting food. Oh, I was going to say, like, we have, like, a garden. I pointed it. It's out there. It's like a little 12 by 6 raised bed that's got basil. Nice. And, you know, we've tried different things over the years. Right now, it's kind of overgrown with basil. It just has taken over the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like, we just have all this. It's just eating basil raw, you know. But, like, when you grow tomatoes out there, or the tomatoes from the CSA that we get, like, they just – I'm sorry – they taste different. They're better. They don't taste like wax. I don't know like what it is, but like there's just I don't know. I mean, it makes sense.
Our food system is designed for mass scale and supply chain. I have an operations background, so I mean it makes sense mechanically. Right. But we pick tomatoes when they're green. My mom and I do a lot of canning, you know, even still now. And so we used to be. She had a farm in California, and some of the local farmers would be like, you come pick the ripe tomatoes and make sauce out of them. So we're out there and I was like, these are beautiful tomatoes. What's wrong with them? And they're like, well, we've been done with the harvest for over a month now, but they pick the greenest tomatoes so they can transport them and they're firm. And then we also, you know, seek traits that make them firm and easy to ship. And then we gas them locally.
Right.
And so that's why they don't have a lot of flavor. And we do that with a lot of our fruits and vegetables. So they're not really picked at their prime. And then, you know, everything's about the supply chain and being able to feed, you know, mass populations with monocrops.
And like, and granted, that tomato that's gassed and all that is better than eating like a Snickers for dinner.
Oh, for sure.
But
for
like, sure. But come like, no. Like, but if you can, I mean, it's like, I know like a lot of people don't have the time, resources, all that, but good grief, if you can, give it a shot. Because not only is it fun, and like my daughters, like they love going out there and like getting their hands dirty and doing stuff like that. They love it. And there's something about like connecting, like you said, to the dirt and getting your hands dirty. And there's also, you know, you get exposure to bacteria. There's all sorts of good stuff that goes with that.
Yeah,
but anyway,
absolutely.
That's good. That's a good answer. I can't believe 30 minutes is up.
I know.
This has been great. I will email, I guess, Jimmy the link.
Okay.
I'll probably do the audio first before I get to the video, because it's now that we started doing video, it's like two different things. And so Rick is always on me about how long it takes, and I'm just like, you're not producing them, I'm doing it takes me a long time. So anyway, so I really appreciate this has been great, and I'll let you know when it goes live. And this is good luck with everything, and hopefully we'll have you back on at some point in the future.
Thank you. Awesome. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
You have a good evening.
You too.
Goodbye.
You're listening to the Simply Human Podcast.
All right, that was Jennifer Maynard. She was awesome. We have the next couple of interviews already recorded. We have Jeff Chilton on, a mushroom guy. He's pretty great. We had a really good time. RealMushrooms.com is his deal. I'm asking everyone their birthday and putting it down. So Jeff Chilton is the next show. And then tonight, we talked to Kirsten Beverly Waters, who is really good. She is
really cool. Really cool lady.
Fitness and yoga and mental health and all sorts of great ancient wisdom stuff. It was really cool interview. So we'll get to her. It'll be a few weeks. So that is one thing that I did. Speaking of when I was isolating, I video produced and audio produced three shows and got all caught up, and it took me like 4 hours one of the days I was out there to do all six of the shows. So I need to just, and so like all three got released like in a 2 day span. So
everyone watch the shows on YouTube. I think that's the easiest way for us to make money, if we can start getting people to do that. So make it all worth Mark's time, and that would be awesome if we made like a court, like we get our first check from Google and it's like
14
cents. 27 cents. Yeah.
I do enjoy it though. I do like having it on there forever. Like I
do too. I like seeing the faces. I like the whole nine yards.
So you remember very quickly episode 60, Santa Claus Talk, which is like my favorite all time intro.
Yes.
We talk in that intro about the kid that goes, "You're Halen's dad." And it's the son of the guy that Chris Churchill, the guy that we knew.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the kid that was like, "You're Halen's dad," back in kindergarten, is like Halen's like boyfriend now, and they're like in sixth grade. So this is like 6 years.
High five, buddy! Yes, like,
like 6 years later, and that kid, it's like, anyway. And then I also my daughters listen to the Urban Prank Call. It's like the first time they like they like understand why it's funny. And they were dying. And man,
I was actually thinking about that last night. And how great that was just the simplicity of like me and you spent like 3 weeks trying to come up with a good prank.
Still
and
wrong.
Finally just born out of like, we'll just call him and ask for Steve.
The best is
that'll piss him off real bad. This is like we do that for like 2 weeks.
Charlie something with Charlie Brown Realtors. And then my name this isn't Steve. And you go, I'm sorry, Steve. And then at the end, and then at the end of the call, you're like, okay, well, sorry to bother you, Steve, and you call him Steve again.
I gotta listen to that again.
It's episode. I think it's episode 103. It's around.
I gotta
go
listen to that again. That was fun. That was really, really fun.
And the link. I mean, it's like the title of the show is the whatever interview and the urban prank call. So it's
that was the one we tried to do with your brother.
That's on there too. That you tried to say like you were like wanting to do an art form and you wanted to do like a picture of a vagina or something. Remember that?
Yeah, I couldn't remember what I was trying. I was trying to commission him to do a painting of a vagina because your brother, Jeff the brother, is not crazy and he's so easygoing that he was basically sniffed it out in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But if it would have been Brad, he would have been so blinded by rage that he would have not realized it's a prank. Does Brad listen to the show?
No.
We gotta figure out something to do with that.
Would be funny. Ruminate on that. That was episode 238. This has been great. That is going to do it for this edition of the Simply Human Podcast.
And remember,
are you a hockey fan? Being from Alaska, New Jersey, that's north. So until next time,
enjoy.